evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we'll have music from The Masqueraders in conversation with original and current member Robert Tex Reitzel. The Masqueraders got their start in Texas in the late 50s and just hit the stage on America's Got Talent just last year. And The Masqueraders will be in our region soon. We're going to start, though, with Jessica Greenwell, checking in once again with Larry Burns, author of 100 Things to Do in Riverside Before You Die. The conversation focused greatly on art, improvements to the city, as well as what's coming to the city.
I think the thing to watch and the thing that we're going to be known for, it's going to be on par with the Mission Inn, maybe even exceed it down the road, is the new Cheech Center, nicknamed the Cheech, that's going to be going in next door there at the Riverside Public Library downtown main branch location. Many people know Cheech Marin as part of the duo of Cheech and Chong, but Cheech has been not only a great artist and philanthropist, he is the single largest collector of Chicano art in the world. He's been out to Riverside a couple times, you know, showing parts of his exhibition at Riverside Art Museum and a few other places. And over the last 6 months, they developed this relationship, and Cheech really fell in love with the city of Riverside, which was a beautiful thing to see. And you can see it's really authentic. He really enjoys his time here. And a couple of things all came together at the right place, the right time. He was looking for a place to display his art permanently. We were looking for ideas to things to do with the main branch library before it moved. And Riverside Art Museum and city leaders put together a wonderful idea to house the exhibition, Cheech's collection in Riverside. So in a couple of years, the fundraising will be complete, and that center is supposed to open, I want to say, in 2019. That is going to be a place that artists from all over the world will come to. This is going to be the center for Chicano art and Chicano studies. It's going to connect very well with our area universities that are already well connected to Chicano arts and Chicano culture. So the Cheech Marin Center for Arts, Culture, and Industry is going to be there on that space. And I think it's there because we've committed ourselves to the arts for so many years and so many decades. You know, the accessibility of art is really something special about Riverside. The community is really going to respond, and they're going to spend a lot of time there. Mm-hmm. And they're going to learn a lot about Chicano art, and then they're going to go out and be good stewards of that art and share it with other people.
That is pretty special. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's exciting to see. That's probably the single biggest thing that's happened this year in terms of arts for the city of Riverside. And there's been a number of accomplishments, and that is probably the biggest.
It sounds like you're really involved as far as everything going on behind the scenes. Are you part of a board or a committee?
I'm a big consumer of art. I believe you need supporters of art. And that's what I really encourage people to do is, you know, go to these things, but buy art once in a while. $5 or $10, you don't have to spend $500. You could. So starting off small, and that's kind of what I do. My involvement with the arts has really primarily been in the literary arts. 10 years ago, I helped found the Inlandia Institute, a nonprofit literary organization that does workshops and publishes books and promotes writers. Now, this book wasn't published Inlandia Institute, but that was really my entry into the literary arts in this community to help support them, and speaks again to that vision and hope I had about telling the story about this community from the members of this community.
Absolutely. You've definitely done your research, and you're speaking to the people with this book. I think you will definitely excite some people that aren't familiar with Riverside and its offerings, and those of us who are there, we have a lot of neat places to explore. One of them that's just kind of off the wall, I also wasn't aware of, the Curiosity Shop.
Yes. A popular term for these places are called escape rooms nowadays. The cool thing about the Curiosity Shop in Riverside is that it was the first one in the Inland Empire to exist. So it's put on by at least one instructor over at Riverside City College, so it's got some local flavor to it. And it's so unassuming, too. It's right there on Main Street. If you know where Farmer Boys is on University Avenue, it's this nondescript building, this little door standing there. And every once in a while, you see people just milling around outside of it looking lost.
Yeah.
And those are people getting ready to go into the escape room.
Maybe they're second-guessing themselves.
Yes, they're like, and when I went for the first time, I said, I think we're in the right space. It seems appropriate. And then somebody pops out of a door. So that's an escape room, and it really is fun. You bring a couple of friends. It's good for team building. It's good just for date nights. It's really a relaxing atmosphere. A little stressful
relaxing?
Because you can – it could be.
It's okay.
Now, when I was first in there, I was worried that people were going to jump out, but then I realized, okay, this isn't one of those types of places.
Okay, because that's kind of the thought I had, that it was, you know, maybe a little stressful.
It's dark and shadowy at times, but nobody's going to jump out and scare you. It's all in your mind. If you get scared, impaired, then it's all in your own creation.
Okay.
But they give you these puzzles to solve and a mystery to discover, and there's clues hidden all over the place. So you're picking up books and looking through them for clues and, you know, looking under desks and, you know, doing puzzles together. So it's good to have a group of four or five people. It's good to have a couple smart people.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
When I went with people smarter than me, and that's one way to successfully complete the escape room. So even if you don't finish it your first time, it's okay.
And maybe not after you've been bar hopping downtown.
Yes, I wouldn't recommend drinking beforehand. Drink afterwards. Yeah. That's what we did.
Have a clear head for these
people. Yes, we had the successful completed that, and then we went down the street to Romano's and had a couple of beers and a pizza. It was a good evening.
A reward for your success.
Yes. Yeah,
you solved the puzzle, right?
Right. We solved it.
Or do they not let you out if you don't?
They do let you out.
Eventually.
Yeah, they don't want to get too bad of a reputation.
Yeah. You're not trapped forever.
Yeah, exactly. You're like in there for you. That's not my kind of fun. But yeah, no, you can celebrate and not worry about the calories.
Okay, I like that. I'm Jessica Greenwell here with Larry Burns. We're talking about his book, 100 Things to Do in Riverside Before You Die, and it is something that you want to check out. So I could ask you how you'd suggest someone diving in and exploring these local treasures, but you've already done that for us, right? So you've got suggested itineraries, activities by season, walking from the convention center, free activities, that's nice, date night friendly, places that rhyme with orange. What were you thinking there? How'd you do that?
I wanted to, you know, nod and recognize the citrus history of the city of Riverside. That's important, but I didn't want to make it my focus. You know, that was one of my fears, is people do know Riverside usually for oranges, and I didn't want it to just be, hey, here's more cool orange stuff.
Okay.
But I did want to have plenty of orange connections, because that is a part of who we are. We have to.
You
can't. If you avoided it, you wouldn't be speaking about the entire history of our community. And so I wanted to have some cool stuff you could do related to oranges, whether it's buying foods, purchasing meals that have orange infused drinks. You know, at W. Wolfskill is a bar that is named after. Yeah,
it's used to be the Falconer, right?
Yes, it was. It was for years that thing was empty. So it's wonderful to see that space open. And really that part of downtown with the Salted Pig and the
coffee. Kind of expanding on that backside now.
Yes, Augie's Coffee Roasters is there now. And then Wolfskill, which is named for a citrus pioneer for the state of California. So again, there's that connection. Their drink specials change every week, but they've always got something unique and special citrus themed that you can enjoy there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's on my list. And I want to check out the Military History Buff itinerary. I think that's really great. And as you dove in today and told us about a lot of that history that I'm sure a lot of us aren't aware of.
Certainly.
That's nice.
It is. And the great thing about it, and a lot of people who've never visited the March Field Museum, which is right there off of the Van Buren Boulevard and the 215 freeway, is that it's great for kids. I brought my sons when they were growing up. I brought my 3-year-old daughter there now. And usually when I do play dates with some other stay-at-home dads, we'll go to the March Field Museum, because you can run around inside. It's spacious. There's cockpits they can run around and jump into and interact with and touch. So they're allowed to touch a lot of the stuff there.
Yeah.
And then they can run around outdoors as well. They've got this big open area of just military hardware from all the various conflicts throughout world history, of course. The interesting thing, and another reason why I wanted to make sure it was in the book, is they're coming up on their 100-year anniversary. So they're doing a lot of cool celebrations there. Over the last 2 years, the programming has really jumped up for March Field Museum. So now they're doing cool stuff like ghost tours and other artwork-related events, and just really cool outside-of-the-box thinking for a military history museum.
Absolutely.
Stuff you wouldn't really normally associate. So they're really trying to attract people to the community and engage a whole new segment of our population with the March Field Museum. And so that's a really an enjoyable place to go to on the typically the other side of town.
Right. So is there a place that's maybe one of your favorites that we didn't bring up today?
It's hard to pick a favorite, right?
It's
kind of like with my children. I've got three kids. It's like, which one's my favorite? The one that I see the most is my favorite. So I let them decide who their favorite
is. They all have great qualities.
Right. They all have wonderful qualities. But which one am I around all the time? It'd have to be the Main Street Pedestrian Mall. I feature that in the book. The great thing about it is it captures the history of Riverside, and it also captures world history. So if you start on 6th and Main, you've got Eliza Tibbetts there with an artist rendition of Eliza Tibbetts. People who are fans of Eliza Tibbetts are often pointing out that's not how Eliza Tibbetts looks, but that's okay. I think that statue is gorgeous. It's a very fairy-like interpretation of Eliza Tibbetts, and it fits. My daughter loves it. I take a picture of it every time I'm downtown. But you start there, and then you go down the street a little bit of a ways, and then you've got An Cheng Ho statue there, which celebrates, again, the citrus heritage of the community. Right across from him is Cesar Chavez marching forward. He's got an action oriented, and that's a good connection to the community of Riverside because we have farm workers and the citrus history. Those farms were all worked by workers and oftentimes, you know, Hispanic workers and people who toiled in the hot sun to provide us with all of these great foods. So it's good to recognize that. And then right near that, you've got Mahatma Gandhi statue, which speaks to the connection of the Asian Indian history in the city of Riverside. And then Martin Luther King's statue right there near downtown. And then finally, you've got the Ismael Villegas Memorial over there near the big fountain. And that celebrates the first Medal of Honor recipient from the city of Riverside from World War I. So you can capture all of the different histories of Riverside. There's really nothing like it in the other cities I've visited. I've tried to visit a lot of downtowns. There's nothing really like it. And every year it gets a little more beautiful. The trees grow in a little bit more. And this used to be called the City of Trees. Those trees are still there. They've been growing like crazy. And it really adds a splendor and a beauty and just a relaxing place to go. So I go down there at least a couple of days a week just to hang out and
it's
bring a lunch.
More than just a string of stores.
Yes.
And no offense, because those are great stores.
But yes.
So much more than that.
And again, it's a good idea to frequent some of those stores along the main street because those are really the lifeblood of our community.
Right.
You don't want to go downtown just to shop, but you want to make sure that if you're downtown exploring these areas, a lot of these areas were put in place by public servants, by community assets, by donations. And to support our community through your commerce is a great way to make sure that those things that we care about are going to be there in 50 or 60 years. And that's my hope and my dream is that a lot of the things I've been talking about now will be changed and different, of course, and maybe even improved, but they'll still be there.
And the next great idea will come to fruition as well.
Yeah, exactly. And so in a couple of years, somebody can write 150 things to do in Riverside if they want.
Absolutely.
And struggle to figure out which 150 to do.
Right. There are too many to list.
Exactly.
That's nice. I appreciate that.
That's my dream.
Yeah. Well, Larry, it has certainly been informative, much more than I was expecting, and that's a really good thing. I learned a lot today, and I really appreciate that. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat with you today. If someone's listening and they want to find the book, where can they do that?
There's a couple of different ways you can find the book. It's online. You can find it through my Facebook page. It's at Larry Mark Burns or my website, larryburns.net. That'll take you to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, where you can purchase it online. You can also purchase it locally at Barnes & Noble. And then a number of smaller retailers, independent retailers, which I always welcome and encourage people to do so, Cellar Door Books. And then a number of places downtown, most of the museums, Mission Inn Museum, Riverside Art Museum. There's still a few copies over at Urge Palette, a few other spots around Riverside. And then the Riverside Metropolitan Museum also carries copies of that book. You can purchase on Saturdays when they're open in 2018. Yes, those are the big spots.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for joining us today. For KVC Arts, I'm Jessica Greenwell here on 91.9 KVCR.
And thank you, Jessica, in conversation with Larry Burns, author of 100 Things to Do in Riverside Before You Die. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, online at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. For the remainder of the program now, it's music from the Masqueraders in conversation with original member Robert Tex Reitzel. Masqueraders will be in our area soon at Zorba Lounge in San Bernardino March 9th and over to Bellflower on the 10th. You may have caught them last year on America's Got Talent, but the story of the Masqueraders starts in the late 50s.
Plus years, man.
Yes, indeed. I guess starting in 1958, looking at you guys as the Stairs. Now, this is actually a middle school thing at this point, right? Around eighth grade or so. Tell me how and why you guys ended up getting together, the four of you at that point.
Well, what happened was Charlie Moore, we started school together in the first grade, okay? And we separated. He went one way and I went another because our families moved out of the neighborhood, you know? And we got back together from middle school, and that's when we formed the group. Charlie we really didn't know each other. Hey, man, he's saying, I'm thinking about putting a group together. You want to get together? Well, that's when it started. That was in 57 at T.C. Household. It started from there. A couple of brothers, Jenny Davis and Lawrence Davis, and then Charlie Gibson. He was a short cat, so whenever we performed, we would get him to have a coat box on his arm. And when we walked out on stage, he'd put the box down and set up on the box so he'd be on the same level with us. After we left elementary, middle school, went to high school, and we used to sing in the stairwell at James Madison High. We rehearsed 7 years, and that was 7 days a week, and nobody missed a rehearsal. That's how dedicated everybody was, you know, and that's how much we love doing what we still doing, you know. I can truly say that singing kept us out of trouble. It did. It kept us out of trouble because we come up in the ghetto and we was on the corner where everything was happening. And the dudes that were out there, they would recruit the young cats like us. You know, they would teach them how to do what they were doing, you know. They came at us and we told them, hey, man, we like what we're doing now. We don't want to do that there. So they didn't bother us, you know. And then we were so into singing, we could go all over the city and nobody would mess with us. We were like ambassadors, man, you know. Nobody bothers. Everybody wanted to hear us sing.
Nice.
I'm telling you, we love it, man. We still sing.
Now, some of the early recordings I know, and this I think was maybe between the early days of the lineup change, some of these recordings for the Southtown label, we have things like Brown Eyed Handsome Man, Caveman Love, that was original, wasn't it? And Flossie Mae.
I got a girl and her name is Flossie Mae. Yeah, it was original.
Did you guys do more originals than having, say, songs brought to you or cover songs, we would say today?
We were writing before we went to Motown. We left Dallas in 1966 and went to Motown, and we only had plane fare one way, and we didn't know anybody in Detroit.
It was still, though, before you went up to Motown that you started to call yourselves the Masqueraders. Is that right?
Well, what happened was, before that, we could sing anybody's song. We could sound just like them or better, and we started ripping. Ripping means that you go out and perform as somebody that you wasn't. We could sound like anybody. They didn't know who they were seeing. They hadn't seen those people in person, you know what I'm saying? So we sound like them, so they thought we were there.
And you had to have been still right around maybe a little bit past high school at this point. This was still early, before your career was really taken off, I suppose.
Yeah, but we loved it, man. You know, and I'm still singing.
It was still early to mid-60s, I suppose. This would be just before going to Motown. You were with Soultown. This is a Houston label. A couple of cool tunes there, A Man's Temptation, also Talk About a Woman. And this is, I guess, what got you up for an audition for Motown? And you got stranded there.
Well, what happened was this dude named Alvin Howard. And Alvin went to Motown, and he sold us on Motown. He had been up, and he talked to Mickey Stevenson,
yes.
Okay, that's what it was. And what happened was, he set up an appointment, but the thing about it was, everybody didn't have their money, so we had to wait until everybody could raise the money. And when we went, thinking that he was going to be there, and when we got there, he was in L.A. We rehearsed for a dude named James Dean. He said, man, we're not going to stop writing for the Temptations and the Four Tops to write for the Masqueraders, you know. So we left dejected, but somebody heard us singing and they came out, hey man, y'all can go down to the 20 grand. They'll let you sing, you know, and he didn't know that we didn't have no money. But on the way, we turned the corner, we was on 14th between Marquette and McGraw. There was a microphone in the window. So we went up and we knocked on the door and a cat named Ted Hess, he was the engineer. He set up a microphone and we started singing and that man had tears in his eyes. said, he said, my boss, he back Monday. He said, if y'all just stick around until Monday, he didn't know we could leave. Just call me the traveling man. Yes, I'm gonna find out what it's all about. What it's all about. But what happened was, after we left there, we went on to the 20 grand. They let us in, and we sung so well that they sold enough money on the stage that we got room and we had food, you know what I'm saying?
Mm.
And when Mr. Beatty, Lou Beatty, he was the guy that owned the studio. He was a construction man, and he owned hotels. He was the millionaire, you know? He said, man, y'all, a dream come true. And we stayed in Detroit a year. We were never outdoors, and we never went hungry. And a matter of fact, the people in the neighborhood, when they found out about us, because we don't meet any strangers, you know?
Right.
When they found out about us, they started inviting us over to their houses for supper. Every day somebody would invite us to eat.
That's as good as pay.
That's what I'm telling you, man. That's love, you know?
Yeah.
But Mr. Beatty, he had two hotels, and he had an apartment, three-bedroom apartment in the basement of one of his hotels, and that's where we stayed. He gave us $50 a week. That was for food, and we didn't have to pay for the lodging because he provided that. And then he gave us jobs. We raked up the beds and changed the linen and stuff, and we had money, you know. So we was having a ball in Detroit.
That's Robert Tex Reitzel from the Masqueraders coming to the area soon. You're with 91.9 KVCR, also at kvcrnews.org. And you had some songs while you were in Detroit.
Yeah, a whole lot of songs.
Yeah. The Family, I Got the Power.
The Family, Call Me the Traveling Man, How, One More Chance, a whole bunch of stuff. Matter of fact, the stuff that we cut in Detroit, we didn't realize how good it was, and the people in England got hold of it.
Okay.
And we found out that we were superstars in the UK. I'm telling you, man, we went to the UK. Let me tell you, this is a whole other story.
Okay, cool.
There were some people come from England, you know, and they real high on vinyl. And they were going to different record shops looking for vinyl records. And most of the folks over there have a little record player that they play their vinyls on. And some of them be walking around there with $100,000 worth of record. You understand what I'm saying? Because that's how much they value. It's the Northern Soul people. And we went over there, and those people said, man, it's as if I've died and gone to heaven. Mm. I never thought I would meet the Masqueraders. But what happened was, they were in Memphis looking for records. They walked in the record shop. It was right next door to my beauty salon. And on the wall, he had an album cover of us on the wall. And one of the fellows from England looked up and said, the Masqueraders. And he said, there's one next door. You know, that's how we got to England, man. God has been taking care of us. I mean, we were kind of bitter, and we wasn't treated fairly. And for a while, we were angry about it. But then God showed us that can't nobody get what God got for you but you. So we weren't bitter anymore about anything, you know?
Right.
Because if you created something, then that's yours. It don't make no difference what somebody else has done with it. But if you can show people that you created it, then they're going to give you your just due, you know? And now everything is coming back around.
Yes, indeed.
Everything's coming back around. And all the stuff that we did is going to be ours again. Matter of fact, we just did a thing yesterday where when we were with American over with Chip Sloman and Don Cruz.
Yes, yes, Memphis.
Don passed. His son gave us our master's back yesterday.
Oh, wow. Wow, just yesterday. Oh, my gosh.
We went to the studio, and we're in the process of recording Change Gonna Come. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He came from Arkansas for that.
You're talking about Sam Cooke?
Yeah, A Change Gonna Come.
Yeah.
That's the song we did on America's Got Talent.
Ah, okay, gotcha.
Okay. And Eric came over, and he had said, I got a surprise for you cats, man. And he gave us our masters.
Wow.
Ain't that something? No problem, because his daddy, Don, loved us, you know. All he had to say was good things about us. He said, I'll put y'all up against any group in the world.
Beautiful.
You know, and most of the people that heard us, you know, felt like, because we don't sound like other groups. We do our thing. We don't try to sound like anybody else, but like I said, we can sound like anybody.
Yeah.
But when we produce something on ourselves or when we take somebody else's record and do something with it, then we call it masqueradenized. You know, and the song never loses its identity. You know what the song is. We take the bold song, and just like we did A Change Gonna Come, we got a thing on At Last. We can take any song and turn it around and masqueradenize it, and people will love it.
That is really cool. People want to do that anyway. Take a song, and if you're going to cover it, make it your own somehow.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We make it our own. We masqueradenize it. And when we did that thing, ATT,
America Got Talent,
the little girls outside waiting on us to come out, over 100 of a man and clapping and jumping up and down. And when you in the Dolby Theater, you got security. So the security that was with us said, well, we can take y'all around the crowd, you know, you don't have to go through them. And the little girls were just going crazy. And the parents were, the mamas were too. Man, thank you, Lord. Thank you. You know, and we sung that song. When we finished singing, people were standing up, man, standing ovations.
Wow.
I'm saying, wow, thank you, Lord. We got the songs that we're going to do that other people have done.
Yeah.
But they don't sound like the way we do them. You know, it's one song that we're going to do. It's a dude, I'm not going to call any names. Okay. They got a choir, and they can't touch what the three of us do.
This is a future recording then?
I think we're going to record it. But, you know, when we look back over the years and all the things that we got past,
yeah,
because a whole lot of cats that came up during the time we were coming up aren't here anymore. And some of them died violently. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm thinking that had we made it back during that time, probably wouldn't be around.
I had read that. You made that statement at some point. If you had enjoyed the same kind of success the OJs did, for example.
Know, yeah, because you know, we didn't have any sense. You know, and if you're crazy with money, you ain't going to last long.
Right.
But God bless us to still be around, and we still love it.
As well you should be. I love the clips that I've seen of you guys singing, and I spoke to a couple of people here around the station. They were excited that I was going to be talking to you. They had seen you on America's Got Talent last year, and they thought that it was really cool. This is fantastic.
We're going to be in California in March, the Knights of Columbus Hall at Bellflowers. That's going to be on Saturday, March 10th, and then we're going to be at Zarber's Lounge in San Bernardino, California, on Friday, March 9th.
That's right.
We're going to do something a little different. Actually,
when
we played 10 years on Beale Street.
Yes.
And on Beale Street, all we had was the keyboard, and sometimes Sam played guitar. But most of the time, we just had the keyboard, and we sang.
Wow.
And that's what we like to do, but people want to put bands with us.
Right.
But we could take that keyboard and go anywhere and sing. And sing, man, you know, that's what we like to do. But people want to put other folks with us. But we're going to have a nice little thing. When we perform, we like to make people comfortable, you know, just relax.
Oh, yeah.
Because what we're going to do is we're going to sing to you. We're going to sing our hearts and soul out, you know. So just be cool, relax, sit back, and let us entertain you.
Wow.
And we're going to sing. We're going to sing. We're going to thrill your soul. Because you're going to be able to feel what we feel because we feel what we say. We don't play. We're sincere about singing, you know.
That's Robert Tex Reitzel from the Masqueraders coming to the area soon. Here with 91.9 KVCR, also at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Let's continue now with music from the Masqueraders in conversation with original member Tex Reitzel. The Masqueraders will be at Zorba Lounge in San Bernardino March 9th and in Bellflower on the 10th. More at Masqueraders Official on Facebook. You can find Zorba Lounge on Facebook as well.
If I were a rich man, I'd spend
Zorba's Lounge, it's an intimate enough venue where we'll be able to see you and see the sweat on your forehead. It's going to be a good experience.
Well, that's good. You know, we love it, man. You know, all we need is a real good sound system so people can hear us, you know. And we get us a good sound system, man, we will be like under the street lamps on the street corner.
Oh, wow.
That's what we used to do, man. All we ever did was sing. We walk and sing. We'd be walking down the street. People come to the doors because they thought we were on the radio.
Sweet.
They thought we were on the radio. You know, I just loved it. And like I said, it kept us out of trouble.
Yes,
it saved us. So I'm really thankful. And we are religious, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we know why we still here. God brought us through. And we're not ashamed to say that to anybody or in front of anybody, you know. I hope we're not stepping on nobody's toes, but...
No, you know, that reminds me, though, a preacher here that recorded one of your tunes, although some folks think of him as a preacher, I think of him as a giant in the world of football, Rosie Greer. Now, So talk about your association. This goes back to Memphis.
Yeah, we met Rosie when he was down here recording. He had broke his leg playing for the Rams. And he was out here with Womack, Bobby Womack. Matter of fact, Bobby Womack was the first cat that we met when we went in the studio over at America.
Whoa.
He was an American, and Daryl Carter, I don't know if you knew about Daryl Carter, but Daryl Carter was a producer at American and over at Willie Mitchell's High Records. And he was instrumental in us being at America because we was on our way to Stax.
Yeah.
We stopped at American because they had the number one record in the country, the Box Top.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and we walked in there, and Bobby said, "Hey, man, if y'all go to Stack, y'all get lost in the shuffle. You know, they got a whole bunch of acts over there. But ain't nobody over here. If y'all stay over here, man, y'all the main thing, you know?"
Yeah, yeah.
So we stayed at America.
And is this when you put out "I'm Just an Average Guy"?
"I Ain't Got to Love Nobody Else" first. That was our first hit, and then "I'm Just an Average Guy." And Bobby played on both those sessions.
Bobby Womack, okay. Wow.
And Bobby also recorded "I Ain't Got to Love Nobody Else." I think it's on his Womagic album.
That one's worth buying just for title alone.
Yeah.
Gosh, so that was Memphis. I know you guys did go back to Texas for a little while, but then back to Memphis.
Well, let me tell you about it.
Please do.
What happened was when we came to Memphis, it was in 67, and Dr. King got killed in April, and we were here when Dr. King got killed. Matter of fact, we had just moved from the hotel where Dr. King got killed to the Adler Hotel because we would get the cheaper rate.
Oh.
And it was still segregated here in Memphis.
Yeah.
You know, when we were over at American, they had a restaurant right next door. It was a Tennessee ham something. But anyway, you know, the only people that they said were white folks, you know. Mm-hmm. And by us being next door at American, we just went in with the Memphis boys, and we sat down and we ate. So one of the bus boys came over to me, and he whispered, he said, "Man, y'all not supposed to be in here." I said, "Why?" He said, "'Cause you black." I said, "Well, you black and you in here." But after that, they thought we were militant when we came to Memphis. They thought we were here to start stuff. You know, they had the Freedom Ride, the bus coming down south and stuff, because we didn't dress like the cats here. The police used to come around the corner and take our pictures. They didn't want to bother us because if we had been militants, that would have gave us an opportunity to act crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So they didn't want us acting crazy, but when they found out we were entertainers, they left us alone. But when Dr. King got killed, we had to leave because they stationed the National Guard in front of at the hotel where we stayed. And the city was under curfew, so they had to send us back to Dallas because it wasn't safe here in Memphis for us.
Oh, my God.
And that was during the time we could. I Ain't Got to Love Nobody Else. That was April 68, and we left and went back to Dallas. And after everything kind of settled down, they sent us a telegram. "Come quick, you have a hit." "I Ain't Got to Love Nobody Else" was hitting in Chicago, it was hitting in Philly, it was hitting in New York. That's how we got back to Memphis.
Okay. And would this then have taken you to Isaac Hayes eventually?
Well, what happened with Isaac was in Hawaii.
Okay.
One of his band members was security and he blew trumpet. Mickey.
Okay.
Okay, he used to carry money. He used to deliver money for Isaac. If Isaac needs the money and he was in another part of the country, he'd fly and take it to him. But anyway, we got with him one night and we did a song, an instrumental off one of Isaac's albums. We did the lyrics to it because Mickey had the key to the studio and he knew how to run the board. And we went over and put some lyrics to the instrumental. And he called Isaac and played it to him in Hawaii. And Isaac said, "Man, who is that?" He said, "That's the Masqueraders, man." He said, "The Masqueraders that wrote, 'I ain't got to love nobody else, I'm just an average.'" He said, "I want them, boy." And that's how we got with Isaac, man.
Wow. So then this was the time of your first full-length album, is that right? You had Everybody Wanna Live
yeah.
On and Love Anonymous.
Yeah. Then we cut another album in Atlanta for Arlene Burns, the Bang Record.
Bang label, yeah. And so then with the Bang label, you had performances and recording, but I don't know if there was anything released at that period from Bang.
But you know what happened? We had a problem with the publishing thing.
Okay.
Because everybody just wanted to take our stuff, and we said, "We're not just giving you our stuff anymore." So they really didn't want to release it. I don't know if they ever released that Masquerade thing at Bang. Because we wouldn't give them the publishing on it.
Gotcha. Music from The Masqueraders in conversation with original member Tex Reitzel. The Masqueraders will be at Zorba Lounge in San Bernardino March 9th and in Bellflower on the 10th. More at Masqueraders Official on Facebook. You can find Zorba Lounge on Facebook as well. I do understand that when you were out doing performances here and there, you would sometimes give away cassettes of some of that material, but it may still be unreleased even though you gave away cassettes. Is that legend
yeah.
or lore there?
Well, it was our stuff. You
yeah,
know what
yeah.
I'm saying?
Yeah, sure.
It belonged to us. And then we wanted somebody to sue us anyway.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Because how can you sue me about something that belongs to me?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we wanted to do. So what happened when Isaac went under, we didn't know that he was going under. And he didn't tell anybody that the ship was sinking. And when we found out, the ship had already sunk. But before the ship sunk, we went to Philadelphia, and we were playing Just Jazz. And everybody that was in the entertainment thing in Philly mm-hmm. came to Just Jazz to see us. Kenny Gamble came to Just Jazz to see us. Kenny Gamble don't go out. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
But he came to see us. And when Isaac got wind that Kenny Gamble was trying to recruit us, this was during the time that he was in the process of filing bankruptcy. So he sent his man up there, his manager, to keep those cats off of us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one reason why we didn't get with Kenny. But Kenny Gamble came in the dressing room, and he said, "Man, y'all one of the baddest group I ever heard in my life." I said, "Well, thank you, sir."
Yeah.
But, you know, history, you know the history, you know.
Yes,
you know
indeed.
Our story. But we're still here. We're the group that everybody thinks is gone, and then they'll hear something about us or on us. You know what I'm saying?
Like throughout your career, you've recorded and then maybe things would stay regionally or have success in Detroit and then mm-hmm. go down to Memphis. And so you were just always on the verge of something. But then you burst into the scene for a lot of people that didn't know you, a lot of, let's say, a second or even third generation, forgive me, with America's Got Talent. So what gave you the notion to go to do this reality TV competition show?
We had gotten to the point where we were about ready to quit, you know. Mm-hmm. Sam had quit. So Harold and I, just to keep singing, we were looking for somebody to sing with. So this cat was singing gospel, and they needed some background vocalists. So we went to see about doing it. we started singing background, and everybody was looking at us, you know. And then Harold and I sang a song, just he and I. And everybody turned around and said, everybody tried to pull us in their group. And then we got with a couple of fellas, and we was recording some stuff, and then they got slick on us. You know, they wanted to take our stuff. And we said, hey, wait a minute, man. You know, we talk about splitting this pie equally. We talk about using our talents. The songs are ours. If we give you a share of them, why you want to take the whole pie?
Yeah.
So we just stopped.
Good.
And then the next thing they saw was us on AGT. The reason why we did AGT, like I said, I had to talk to Sam to get him back in the fold.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, man, AGT is coming to Memphis. Y'all want to do it? And the guy said, yeah. We got to the venue. Man, it was over 4,000 people.
Oh, my gosh.
Out of the 4,000 people, they chose us to be one of the acts to go to Hollywood. We started to leave a couple of, two or three times.
Yeah.
Because it was a madhouse, man. We was thinking that we would go see somebody, and then and we was there from 11:30. When I got home, it was about 11:30, 12 o'clock that night. But we were there, and when we got ready to leave, because we had to go and move our car, they were going to put that thing on the tire.
The wheel lock.
Yeah. And we got there just in time to keep us from doing it, because they texted us over our phone and told us to come move our cars, you know. So we went and moved the cars, and we went back in, and then when we went back in, things started moving. They had us in the room with about 20 people. They had different groups, singers, dancers, whatever you did, magicians, and different groups. So we were, I think we were about the 18th or 19th group to be interviewed. And when we got up to sing, we sang a cappella, because that's what we thought we had to do. And then when they asked us, y'all have music? Yes, we got a track. They told us, hey, wait a minute. Y'all go outside. We got another act. After that, we'll call you back in. And after the other act performed, they told everybody else to leave. And we went back in, and they put the track on, and we sang with the track. And then they took us up to the main folks, the big folks, right? The folks that was running it. And when we sang with them, man, those people, you could just see them, you know. They were just melted, man. We killed them.
What was that? I'm just an average guy?
No. We had to sing the song that we sang on TV.
Oh, okay.
We had to sing that song. They wouldn't let us change it.
Oh.
Matter of fact, we were dressed the way we were dressed when we went. That's what we had to sing in. That's why we were in different outfits, you know, had to sing in that. Whatever you had on the day that you auditioned was what you had to sing in. But it looked good, man. They made it look good. I'm like, God, that looks great.
You know, one question I guess I have to ask is, you know, as far as me looking at the history of you guys, I've got an album recorded sometime around 1980, and then we jump all the way up to 2017 for America's Got Talent.
During that time, we gigged.
Okay, you're
for
still
10
gigging.
Years. We gigged for 10 years on Bill Street. Yeah, we gigged for 10 years on Bill Street every weekend. Bill Street was like the place that was our home base. And we got gigs out of the engagements that we were doing on Bill Street. We went to England three times while we were gigging on Bill Street. We gigged all over the country while we were gigging on Bill Street, because we could leave and come back. So we used Bill Street as a springboard, you know. We sung every weekend, and sometimes during the week, you know, whenever we got a gig. That's what happened. We were still singing. We were singing in church, you know. Matter of fact, they given us an award, Trailblazers Legend Award here in Memphis, on the 25th of this month.
Oh, congratulations. Man, that is really cool. You know what? When this airs, this will be just 3 days after you receiving that award. Nice.
I also like to send a shout out to Irma Clanton. She is a lady that recommended us for the award. Well, she started a drummer ministry at the church, because she taught drummer at the college here in Memphis State University. And when they opened up the Church of Scientology, she was like a mother to Isaac. Because when they opened up, they had entertainment, and she asked us to be part of the entertainment for the Church of Scientology. And we met Lisa Marie at that event. And we had a song called "He's the Father of Lisa Marie," and we sung it to her. She cried, man, but she didn't do anything to help us, but she loved that song. We killed her with it. But Miss Clanton, you know, I'm going to say something at the event, because she is instrumental in us staying together, because she wrote a play and she wrote us in it, and we were doing a talent show. And the winner from the talent show was going to win a contract to go abroad and stuff. We didn't win, but we were on the show. She apologized because she said, they know that y'all were the best act on the show.
Beautiful. Wow.
Oh, boy.
Before we wrap this, who are the Masqueraders today? What is the lineup? It's a trio these days, yes?
That's Harold Thomas, Harold Sundance Thomas. My name is Robert Tex Wrightsoul, and Sam Hutchins. Sam don't want to be, we used to call him the bull rider. He don't like it, but he really, when he was young, he rode bull. You know, he's the cat that was singing the lead on A Change Gonna Come, but we all sing, so we all sing lead too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure.
That's myself, Robert Tex Wrightsoul, Harold Sundance Thomas, and Sam Hutchins. That's the makeup of the group now. David was with us, but he has foxes, and they had to put him in the home because he started falling. And then the last time, the five of us, other than Charlie, were together was in New Jersey at one of Charlie Hunter's events. If you go on the internet, you can see it. They got a society that covers harmony, classic urban harmony. If you go on there, Charlie Horner, Classic Urban Harmony, they gave us an award for over 50 years, you know.
Yeah.
I'd like to say a thing about Christina Marisol, because she's the one that's bringing us out there. Shout out to Christina Marisol, and most of all, shout out to Patty McGill, because she's the one that made this thing possible, and I appreciate it, and I appreciate you, man. Thank you.
And I appreciate it as well. Thank you so much, and we'll see you real soon. I will be there.
Okay, David. Well, we're looking forward to seeing you, man.
Music from the Masqueraders, and we've been speaking with Robert Tex Wrightsoul. The Masqueraders will be at Zorba Lounge in San Bernardino March 9th and in Bellflower on the 10th. More at Masqueraders Official on Facebook. You can find Zorba Lounge on Facebook as well, with more events and activities beyond the Masqueraders March 9th. And that's just about going to wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks once again to author Larry Burns, Tex Wrightsoul of the Masqueraders, and with that, a huge thank you to Patty McGill and Christina Marisol, the major forces in one capacity or another for having the Masqueraders here. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Jessica Greenwell, and Benjamin Perper. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts. Behind us now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. And David Fleming, thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.